Good afternoon, friends. This is a special CNN. We're talking about fracking this afternoon. Getting some live reports from Naples. We're at the Little Gay Community Center Auditorium. EPA here. Right now, as we're beginning to have this show, the hearing is beginning. To tell you a little bit about it, the EPA hearing is scheduled for March 11th. We need all Floridians to join us to create a critical mass. How many show up will determine what the EPA does. We need to come together to save our water and our Everglades from dirty drilling. Yes, it's true there have been wells in the Everglades before. But these wells were not fracking wells. They weren't injecting high-pressure fluids and solvents into the aquifer. They weren't pumping these gases and this mix of sludge, which is going to require additional water resources, which, as we know, due to the water shortages, we don't have. Oil drilling is more than an environmental issue. It's a human rights issue. Extreme extraction violates the most basic of all human rights, access to clean water and clean air. The drilling that we're trying to stop has begun only 1,000 feet from homes in the Big Cypress Swamp watershed, a critical recharge area in the western Everglades. Each well is permitted to use 5 million gallons of water per month. Unlike agricultural water, the drilling water cannot be recycled or reused. It has become toxic because of the solvents and chemicals used, which, by the way, are secret, thanks to both Dick Cheney and the Florida legislature. Those chemicals, that chemical toxic cocktail that's injected at high pressure under the ground, is not for us to know about. Okay, each well permitted to use 5 million gallons of water per month. And unlike agricultural water, it can't be reused. Given the worldwide water scarcity and the annual water restrictions in South Florida, it is criminal to permit the oil industry to destroy so much fresh water. Imagine thousands of wells on this 115,000-acre parcel. And even more, since Collier Resources just leased another 350,000 acres of mineral rights for seismic testing. Just as the pumping of the aquifers in Florida has dried up natural springs, and in Texas, entire cities too, the oil industry's pumping of our aquifer threatens to dry up nearby wells and wetlands, including the Fakahatchee, the Picayune, and the Corkscrew. This new type of drilling that includes acid fracking could easily destroy the entire 30-year, $13 billion Everglades restoration project. Drilling is thus a major threat to our water, our drinking water, our beaches, our estuaries, our rivers, our wetlands, the Gulf, the Everglades, Florida Bay, and the Keys, all of which are vital to our economy, our wildlife, and to the people who call Florida home. Florida is still suffering from the worst oil disaster on record. We know that accidents happen. Over time, pipes leak, injected fluids surface, and as the BP disaster showed, even cement casings can fail. Because it only takes one incident to taint or even ruin a community's aquifer, drilling is not in the public interest. Our water and our Everglades are far more valuable than even a major oil play. They're our lifeblood, fueling everything from agriculture to our multi-billion dollar tourist industry. The Everglades is also a national treasure, on par with the Grand Canyon. Extreme extraction isn't safe. Not here, not anywhere. Ask Pennsylvania. Texas, West Virginia. It's now time to preserve our air and our water that keep us alive. Now is the time to create a sustainable future. Please, join us March 11th in Naples. Bring as many people as you can. This is an urgent, urgent, urgent request. The federal EPA is lying in for a hearing. The federal EPA is flying in for a hearing that could decide the fate of Florida water and open the door to Everglades drilling. We need to act fast. We need to get big. It's time to show just how strong and far-reaching opposition to Everglades drilling is. We need you at the hearing to say no to the injection well. March 11th, clean water, not dirty drilling. See you in Naples. By the way, the EPA's informational meeting is from 4 to 6. The EPA's public hearing is from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. There's still time for you to go if you're on the West Coast. But if you're not, you should know you can still act. If you'd like to send email, send it to mcmanus.fred@epa.gov. The attention of Fred McManus, Chief Groundwater and UIC Sections. By the way, I'll read you that again. McManus, M-A-N-U-S, .fred@epa.gov. That's for Fred McManus, Chief of Groundwater and UIC Sections. Here's the public notice. Public notice. U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, Region 4, Water Protection Division, Safe Drinking Water Branch 61, Forsyth Street, Southwest Atlanta, Georgia, 30303-8960, phone number 404-562-9385, public notice number FL14UIC001, January 7, 2014, notice of informational meeting and public hearing for proposed issuance of underground injection control permit. The purpose of this notice is to announce that the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, Region 4, is holding an informational meeting and a public hearing on the proposed issuance of an underground injection control, that's a UIC permit, under the authority of Title 40 of the Code of Federal Regulations, 40 CFR, at parts 124, 144, 146, and 147. Attention to Dan A. Hughes Company, LP 208 East Houston Street, Beeville, Texas, 78102, for the conversion, operation, plugging, and abandonment of the injection well Collier number 22-5 SWDW that is subject to Florida to subject to permit FLI0047. And is located in Sunnyland Oil Field, Collier County, Florida, Section Township Range 2249S28E, 1,959 minutes FSL and 950 FWL. The purpose of the informational meeting is to inform the public regarding the EPA's permitting process, provide information concerning construction and operating requirements for a Class II injection well, and to answer related questions. The hearing will allow the public an opportunity to make oral statements and or present written comments and other information concerning the proposed permit. All information received by the EPA during the public hearing will be included in the administrative record. When? Tuesday, March 11, 2014, from 4 to 6 p.m. for the informational meeting. For the public hearing, 6:30 to 8:30. Where? Golden Glades Community Center Auditorium, 4701 Golden Glades Parkway, Naples, Florida, 34116-6901. Requests to make oral statements and or present written comments and other information may be mailed to Fred McManus, that's MCMANUS, Chief, Groundwater and UIC Section, Safe Drinking Water Branch, Water Protection Division, U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, Region 4, 61 Forsyth Street, that's F-O-R-S-Y-T-H Street, Southwest Atlanta, Georgia, 30303-8960. On August 6, 2013, the EPA issued a public notice of its intent to issue UIC permit number FL-I-0047 to Dan A. Hughes Company, LP. During the 30-day comment period, numerous interested persons requested a public hearing on the proposed permit. In accordance with 40 CFR 124.12A, 1, 2, the director shall hold a public hearing whenever he finds, on the basis of requests, a significant degree of public interest. The director may hold a public hearing at his discretion whenever, for instance, such a hearing may clarify one or more issues involved in the permitting decision. Based on the responses and questions received by the EPA, we have decided to conduct an informational meeting and public hearing on the proposed permit. After consideration of all timely written comments, the requirements and policies of the Safe Water Drinking Act, and appropriate regulations, and after consideration of all comments, statements, and data presented during the public hearing, the EPA's regional administrator or his designee will make final determination regarding permit issuance. If the final determination is made to issue the permit, the EPA regional administrator or his designee will so notify all persons who objected to the permit issuance or participated in the public hearing. If the final determination is substantially changed, including a determination not to issue the permit, the EPA regional administrator or his designee will issue a public notice indicating the revised determinations. Within 30 days after the regional administrator serves notice on the above permit decision, any person who provides a comment or participates in the public hearing may petition the Environmental Appeals Board, EAB, to review the permit decision or any condition therein. Any person who failed to provide comments, statements, data, or failed to participate in the public hearing may petition for administrative review only to the extent of the changes from the proposed permit issuance. Additional information regarding administrative review is available in 40 CFR 124.19 or by contacting Ms. Wilda Cobb of the Office of Environmental Accountability at the above address or telephone number 404-562-9530. Technical information regarding the permit review is available by contacting Mr. James Ferreira of the Groundwater and UIC Section at 404-562-9399. A petition to the EAB under 40 CFR 124.19 is a prerequisite to seeking a judicial review of the final permit decision. The administrative record for this permit, which includes statement of basis, all comments from the public comment period, and all data submitted by the applicant, is located at the EPA Region 4 Office, 61 Forsyth Street, Southwest Atlanta, Georgia, 303-083-8960. A record can be reviewed between the hours of 9 and 4:30 p.m. Monday through Friday, excluding legal holidays. Copies will be provided at the cost of 20 cents a page. Please bring the foregoing to the attention of anyone who might be interested in this matter. And I want to read you a couple other interesting related stories. Let me see here. Fracking in Florida. Yes. Preserve our paradise. If you want to search for more information, both the Preserve Our Paradise and the Clamshell Alliance are doing a great job getting the word out. Now, it's become part of a larger water quality movement here in Florida that was started back in November, where over 113 different organizations have come together to work on water and water quality here in Florida. So it's not just quality, but it's quantity as well. There's huge amounts of water being privatized, giving away the natural resources that are Florida. This is from the Preserve Our Paradise website. A wonderful resource of information for people concerned about fracking here in Florida. Fracking Florida. Fracking is only one of the many ways in which an oil well can harm our communities and environment. Traditional as well as modern enhanced oil recovery techniques, that sounds like a nice euphemism for stress positions, huh? Poses many risks. Although each risk or impact an individual well may be both small, both the risk and the impacts are cumulative. In Florida's delicate ecosystems, these accumulated risks and impacts far outweigh any benefit that accrues to the public and to the environment. Risks and benefits. Sound public policy should always be based on a careful, thoughtful consideration of both the risks and benefits of any policy. Fracking proponents will argue that these risks are small, but the benefits are nearly non-existent. But in the absence of benefits, even small risks are unacceptable. Despite legal requirements to assess cumulative impacts within a risk-benefit analysis, administrative and judicial precedents have often followed a case-by-case, rule-by-rule, death-by-a-thousand-cuts approach to the permitting of environmental impact. We do not expect it will be quick, easy, or cheap to realize the panoptic public policy within the history of nearsighted precedents. Consequently, our first task is to recruit professionals and highly skilled volunteers to research and articulate a best public policy based on the assessment of cumulative risks and benefits. Okay, here's a link to the FDEP. FDEP handles the main oil and gas drilling permits. The FDEP oil and gas program, let's open that up, should be interesting. The oil and gas program, so-called, statutes, oil and gas program, chapter 377, Florida statutes and rule 62C through 25 through 30, Florida Administrative Code, is the permitting authority within which the Department of Mining and Mineral Regulation Program. Companies interested in exploration or production of hydrocarbons in Florida are required by the oil and gas program. Primary responsibility of the program includes conservation of oil and gas resources, correlative rights protection, maintenance of health and human safety, and environmental protection. These concerns are addressed through a system of permits and field inspections to ensure compliance. Key activities include permitting geophysical operations, usually seismic prospecting, and drilling or operating wells, all separate permits, and tracking activities through the use of a computer database. All permitting activities are inspected by the oil and gas staff. Two field offices facilitate these inspections. The offices are located near Florida's productive oil fields in Northwest Jay and South Fort Myers, Florida. Decisions regarding non-routine well spacing, production allowables, field utilization, and sensitive environments often lead to controversy since they invariably affect sensitive issues such as correlative rights or the environment. It's crucial that these decisions be technically and scientifically well-founded. Therefore, expert input from petroleum engineers, petroleum geologists, and various scientific disciplines from other governmental agencies are included in the permitting process. Well, that's the way it's supposed to work, right? Okay. History of oil in the Sunnyland trend. There we go. That should be a real hoot. Okay. Again, this is from our good friends in Preserve Our Paradise website. History of oil in the Sunnyland trend. Early last century, the New York advertising magnate Baron Collier acquired some 1.3 million acres of property in South Florida, including what is now Collier County. Oil exploration in South Florida, principally in the Sunnyland trend, began in 1943 when the population of Collier County was approximately 5,500 people. Oil production peaked in the late 1970s at the DEP, Florida Department of Environmental Protection. Around this time, Collier County and Southwest Florida generally had become a resort and retirement community. Between 1960 and 1980, population had grown from 15,000 to 85,971. Sunnyland trend was largely abandoned by far richer fields were discovered elsewhere in the world. By 2010, the population of Collier County had grown to 321,520. But in 2012, all South Florida oil production amounted to only 0.13% of U.S. fossil fuel consumption. U.S. Energy Information Administration. Oil production in South Florida became a forgotten industry, forgotten by all but the Collier family companies, which had retained mineral rights to most of the 1.3 million acres that Baron Collier held at his death in 1939. Meanwhile, American Wetlands Month was created in 1991 by the EPA and its federal, state, tribal, local, not-for-profit, and private sector partners to celebrate the vital importance of wetlands to the nation's ecological, economic, and social health, and to educate Americans about the value of wetlands as a natural resource. This event marks the emerging national awareness that civilization and development must be coordinated within the fragile ecosystems on which the communities of South and Southwest Florida depend. Recent history. In 2012, news stories predicating renewed oil exploration in South and Southwest Florida began to appear regularly in trade magazines and in the South Florida press. Background, preserveourparadise.org, page under bar ID equals 95. But the oil industry remained obscure and forgotten until April 28, 2013, when some 31 residents of Golden Gate Rural Estates in suburban Naples received a non-postmarked flyer in their mailboxes notifying them that they were in the evacuation zone of a proposed oil well. Information slowly emerged, culminating in a public meeting convened by Collier County Commissioner Timothy Nance on May 30th. An overflow crowd of residents turned out for the meeting. There was much disenchantment with the information provided and with the fact that not all residents were afforded an opportunity to speak or question Commissioner Nance and representatives of the oil company. Immediately after that meeting, residents independently launched a website, preserveourparadise.org, calling itself Preserve Our Paradise. And the ad hoc citizens group released press notices and arranged television news events to increase citizen awareness of the proposed resumption of oil exploration, not only adjacent to residential neighborhoods, but also adjacent to the Florida Panther National Wildlife Refuge. On June 11th, the group sponsored a second town hall meeting at the Collier County South Regional Library. A subsequent history of the ad hoc citizens group can be found within their pages and in the public record of comments submitted to the Florida Department of Environmental Protection. Although established non-profit conservation groups became alerted to the reemergence of oil exploration and an environmental concern, they too had been blindsided by the long-term obscurity of Florida's very small oil industry. In the public eye, Preserve Our Paradise had become the regional leader of forces concerned to protect the area's fragile environment against resumed oil exploration. especially in the context of new and enhanced oil recovery. Techniques such as hydraulic fracturing, which had never before been even contemplated in our ecosystem. The ad hoc citizens group decided to incorporate and seek 501c3 status, better to pursue the continued community education and review of contemporaneity of state and local regulations with respect to oil and gas exploration and the environment, since many of these regulations appear to not be reviewed in 30 years or more. Preserve Our Paradise, Inc. was incorporated as a Florida not-for-profit corporation with effective date of July 1st, 2013. Okay. Interesting background on that history of fracking in Florida. Next up, let us go to Southwest Florida against fracking in Facebook. So let's see what we got there. Boom. Okay. So here we go. Southwest Florida against fracking and drilling. There's again notices about the possibility of the attending that hearing. And don't forget, give Mr. McManus an email. And as you heard before, we also got his phone number. So let's go ahead and get those out again. And I also want to read you my letter to the EPA that I wrote to Mr. McManus, because I think that's something that is worth sharing. So hold on one second. Let me put some music on while I go find this, okay? Here we go. We've heard that. Let's see what other nice tunes we got for you. Here we go. This is something nice. Okay, well, that was just a little give peace a chance. I'd like to welcome my first guest, Luis Cuevas from Progressive Push. Luis, welcome, sir.
Hey, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good, buddy. I wish and I could be in Naples, but we're doing the next best thing we can do.
Yeah, that's good.
So tell me, sir, you know, when the issue of fracking first came up here in Florida, a lot of people said, no, the only place they're going to do this is up in the Panhandle. And I know you've been around Florida for a while. Did you realize that they were still keeping their options open with this oil industry here in Florida?
Yes. One of the interesting things that I lived in the Fort Myers area 6 years ago. And interesting enough, when you buy a piece of property there, you find, you know, if you look at the abstract of the property and the history of the property, they tell you all the deeds that have, you know, come there. But one of the most interesting thing was that the oil companies over the years have reserved drilling rights to the soil and subsoil. And in most places is the subsoil, so that they can tap into that whenever they want. So regardless of you owning the property, they can still go in there and actually look for oil as long as they have that in their deeds. And Exxon and many of these companies have for years defended their rights. They haven't died. As long as they keep them in the books, they're alive. And most of what is coming into that area that they want to frack in South Florida, 250,000-plus acres in the big Cypress Swamp, those developers come from Collier County, which is a terribly conservative section, and Naples is a city with the most millionaires in the entire United States having residence. And then they have these companies from Texas who have been for years now aggressively looking into it. So the question is whether actually there is the abundance of oil wealth which they, you know, they seek. And I think that some of them are ambitiously seeking to see if they can somewhere tap in the oil that supposedly is off the coast of Florida towards Cuba, because then they would think that they would have another Saudi Arabia, which are really, you know, enormous claims that don't seem to have any truth in them. But that has been underway. Yes, they've been looking at it. There's all kinds of geological studies that they perform. Those are the ones that you don't hear about because they're quietly done. Nobody notices them. And if you look at the history of this area, there's all kinds of developers wanting to tap into that whole region. Miami is moving northward. They have all kinds of problems there. The population is moving up. There are even plans of for building towns. There's a so-called Big Cypress town that's been in the planning for years. I'm not. I haven't done the search in the last few years to see if these people are all interconnected, but knowing how developers work, they know what the other one is doing in most cases. And there needs to be a search done in the building permits, along with the drilling permits, because along the line they have to do trails, they have to do roads. And there have to be impact assessments that go with them. So it's not just the well with fracking. It's everything else that goes in the process, which means that somewhere there's going to be a local boom for workers, which is going to attract all kinds of people wanting to make money off of them. And that will have a major human impact in an environmentally sensitive area which cannot take that impact. And particularly where they want to drill is home to the last panther, Florida panther colonies in the state.
It's a shame. And you know exactly how they're going to sell it. They're going to sell it as a jobs program. And,
exactly, and
we're supposed to look the other way when it comes to development. I was going to read this letter I'd written to Fred McManus, and so I wanted to share that with folks, and then I want to have you react to it, sir. This is again written to Fred McManus, who is the EPA rep, who is ostensibly concerned about this area. Let's think positively. Definitely dedicated to make this a better world. Okay, so here we go. Mr. McManus, EPA, I have been an environmental activist since I first read Rachel Carson back in the 60s. I remember back in the 70s when the idea of a day to celebrate to protect the Earth was considered a radical idea. It was President Nixon, a man with his share of flaws, who saw fit to recognize the dangers to our environment by unregulated and unfettered industrial abuse to our land and water. The EPA has borne fruit, wonderful fruit, over the many decades since it was first founded. Yet our waters and our air are still not safe. Daily we're bombarded with news stories of regulators too cozy with the industries they are meant to regulate and oversight, spinning in the revolving doors between right laws and regulated laws. We have seen countless stories about water rendered useless to sustain life, toxic to plants, wildlife, and people. The EPA is the last hurdle before the Florida's shallow aquifer is surrendered and compromised by a state regulatory system that has not only ignored the damage, but fought expensive court battles with public money to free their clients, the polluters, so they could profit from the destruction of Florida's heritage of lands and waters. Mr. McManus, Citizens will neither profit nor will they be protected by the state of Florida regulators or legislators. We look to the EPA to protect us, our last bastion of hope. The state of Florida has fought the EPA year after year not to institute tougher standards, but to allow the poisoners and the profiteers to desecrate and destroy Florida's fragile ecology. Once the fracking begins, which is entirely a short-term, fast-buck enterprise, the damage will be permanent, not just for the panther and the other unique wildlife of Florida, but for the people who will be damaged for decades. And, of course, the tab to clean up the damage will be placed on the backs of the long-suffering, poisoned public. Now, we ask for your help. If the EPA doesn't stand opposed to the profiteers who have been freed by the non-regulators to pillage and destroy Florida, not just for today, but for decades, maybe even centuries to come, we need the EPA to protect us as our Congress once demanded. Protect us from the profiteers and the despoilers. That was my letter to
you. Excellent.
Thank you, brother.
Yes. Yeah, you touched into very important issues there. And the saddest thing is that EPA, which is being bombarded and attacked from everywhere in the state of Florida and in Congress in Washington, they have been cutting its budget and everything. So that, you know, to weaken it. So as you said, if that is the last bastion that we have, we are in trouble. You know, is that it's under a sail. You know,
yeah.
It's been shredded to pieces because they take little bites here and little bites there. They defund this. They deauthorize that. Unfortunately, the Congress in Washington is one that, you know, it's a gang that couldn't shoot straight, and they end up shooting each other in the process more often than not. So as long as, you know, and then we have the Senate that controls what is going, you know, that blocks. But ultimately, when you think about it, it all comes to the state of Florida, where we have the most dangerous situation, because they have a overwhelming majority, and they seem to have absolutely no interest in protecting the environment of the state of Florida, or the citizens of the state of Florida, for that matter, as long as corporations are happy. And you have pointed there something, you know, that EPA itself needs to consider, and I hope it goes even further up the line, that we need to have an assertive reaction on the part of EPA right now. And we should, in fact, make this, even talking from the political angle, a political issue needs to be taken out there, because it is not just now, it's the future, as you say. It's the children who will be living in these lands. And I think that it would be very important, perhaps at a future show, if you could get people to come in and talk about their fracking neighbors. These people who are just coming in, they move in, they claim, of all things, eminent domain, and they take your land, and they put all these, you know, pipes, and they don't even need to come into your land anymore. They can do it, you know, these tentacles. Yeah, they put out these tentacles, and they can come into your land. You never notice it. They flooded it with all kinds of solvents that are extremely toxic.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what they need to break up that rock, and they inject that, you know, with that millions of gallons of water there, and so they pull out contaminated water, but they leave also millions of contaminated gallons of water down there.
Yeah.
And
the permit says 5 million gallons they're allowed every month.
Yeah.
5 million gallons destroyed.
Exactly. And the other one thing is that not all of Florida, will they be tapping in the Florida aquifer? Because, you know, South Florida does not have much water there.
That's right.
South Florida depends on the Okeechobee. And you know what it's like in South Florida when there is a drought.
Yeah.
It gets really bad, really dangerous. You know, I just don't see how anybody could conceive of doing that in that region. Needless to say, you know, tapping into the aquifer and then hurting the rest of the population of the state. It's already been a quarrel about the water in the aquifer because they've tried to put a pipeline taking water from North Florida, from the aquifer, down to South Florida. And you imagine if they do that to take millions of gallons so they can frack, not for the population of South Florida?
You know, yeah.
And here are these companies, all these people who are talking about their libertarian rights, and then say, wait a minute, and you are saying, oh, give this private corporation, as they have done to the Keystone Enbridge, the Canadian company, eminent domain rights within the United States, and now you're going to have these companies from Texas coming to Florida and claiming eminent domain so that they can enrich themselves further, devastate the land, and then you know what they do? The money goes away because it's not going to be invested in the state of Florida.
Oh, no.
That's the biggest scam there is with this. And you're going to have, at a peak, a few 1,000-2,000 employees. Then you have these roving little towns that appear with all kinds of elements of undesirable, parts of society that unfortunately are looking to scam and take away from the workers, and that goes right along there.
Let me bring you this article. This is from the News Press. South Florida may be ripe for fracking. The controversial process of drilling for oil and natural gas is pumping billions in the government coffers, residents' pockets, and energy company bank accounts across the country, creating thousands of jobs, reducing reliance on foreign energy, and causing environmental concerns. Fracking, formerly called hydraulic fracturing, involves injecting a well with a cocktail of water, chemicals, and sand at high pressure, fracture rock, and to access previously untapped reserves. A fracking frenzy has swept through North Dakota, Pennsylvania, New York, Wyoming, Colorado, West Virginia, Louisiana, Arkansas, Ohio, Montana, Texas, and elsewhere. In Williston, North Dakota, Mayor Walter Kossel says that fracking has brought the state $1.5 to $2 billion in the last year alone. It's been intense, he said. Fracking is inevitable in South Florida. Maybe within a year, said Ed Pollister, owner-operator of a small company called Century Oil with offices in Immokalee in Michigan. Pollister says he's discussed his desire to frack with officials from the State Department of Environmental Protection. At some point, if I don't do it, somebody else will, he said. Alico Inc. could also have a future in fracking. The company discovered as much as 94 tons of possible fracking sand in Hendry County. Fracking fever is fueled by new technologies developed over the last 10 years. Obviously, they have concerns.
Well,
by a PR agency or a journalist, what do you think?
I'll tell you. You know what we call the Fort Myers Press?
No.
The mullet wrapper. I mean, it's a sorry excuse for a newspaper. I'm sorry. There's, you know, objective journalism ceased and desisted years ago in that part of the country. If you look at that area going through there and up to the District 13s where we're having election today. At this moment, that is, what I call it, is a press desert. Only independent media, can do anything there and be thought of as providers of information, because what you have is pre-digested news. That are put out, and of course they're never to some kind of way, let's say, insult the members of Congress that live in the area. And so
here's a far more balanced piece. This is by an ecologist and good friend of the show, Anita Stewart, who writes this in the op-ed news. She writes, homeowners in the Golden Gate community outside of Naples, Florida, are alarmed over plans to set afoot to drill and frack a 13,900 feet deep exploratory well within 1,000 feet of their residences. Residents living within a square mile of the intended site first learned about this when they received a frightening notice from a company called Total Safety, Inc. So they could formulate an requesting emergency contact information so they could formulate a evacuation plan in the event of a explosion or toxic chemicals release. Now, of course, fracking's totally safe. What are they even worried about? My God.
Yeah.
Residents have begun organizing an emergency grassroots effort to stop the drilling and fracking and fighting before it begins and shut down the permitting process. They planned an emergency town hall meeting and have created a website called Preserve Our Paradise, a Facebook site, and also the good people of the Clamshell Alliance. Organizer Drew Mule stated that while the permit does not mention activities consistent with hydraulic fracking, the toxic chemical routine used are probably the same or similar to what we use at the planned site and are being kept secret under the guise of proprietary restrictions. Because you might mix up a batch of that stuff, Luis, and then what do you do, right? And now the platform, the Green Party, we believe that no one, including people of color and the poor, should be poisoned or subject to harmful levels of toxic chemicals, and that no group of people should bear a disproportionate share of pollution from industrial, governmental, and commercial resources. You know, Luis, let's put it this positively. At least we know there will be no millionaire who will be troubled by someone drilling in their backyard. Wasn't that just a perfect example when that CEO, was it Mobil or Exxon? I forget.
Yeah, Exxon. Yes. when they are running with the pipeline down his way, and it so happens that it will he is in the business, of course, and he's been selling fracking until the pipeline is going to come right through his neighborhood. And now he's screaming. Oh, my, what am I going to do? My property values. He doesn't care about the health of anybody. He cares about his property value. And there is something that people don't even realize, the first thing that's going to go down is your property value. It doesn't go up. It just, go down because they're depleting it. You're being robbed. So what little you get up front, you're not going to get any more or anything else later. Then you have to clean up. And that is if you live long enough to have
right.
that worry. Yeah,
yes,
because
dying people are very quiet usually.
Yeah, really awful, and what I'm worried about is that people are not going to have or be able free to let their children go, you know, go play outside. People will have to worry about taking a shower. And some of those toxic chemicals are very much like the ones that were put in by BP out in the Gulf.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, exactly. I mean, that dispersant is forbidden in Great Britain. They won't allow it in the North Sea oil fields. And here is BP using that which they bought and can't use there, and they do it in the U.S., where we welcome them with very cheap licenses to drill, and we say, devastate the country. You know, remember that Russian comedian who used to say, what a country. Yeah. You know, only here do we allow this. When we hear about this huge area, Pennsylvania, New York, Canada, you know, from that where you have the and the name just went flying right by my mind. It's a senior moment, but you get the all this land, you know, subsoil, which mm-hmm. even Kerry came out and said this is bigger than Saudi Arabia. Which is really nuts because it's nowhere near what the Saudis have in terms of oil. It really means how many people you can really damage. And if Mario Cuomo allows that to be done in New York State, that would be a real crime. But, you know, when we think in terms of doing it to pristine, already endangered South Florida, Everglades, the big cypress swamp. What are we doing?
Yeah, well, read another story that will be collateral to this. This is from Truth Out. Could Florida become the new fracking frontier? From February this year. Disney, the Everglades, migrating birds, tourists. Fracking? Fracking wells and impoundments were once a far-fetched possibility in Florida, but soon they could be hitting close to home. An industry interest in bringing fracking to the Sunshine State intensifies. Environmental groups worry about the risk from ranging from contaminated groundwater disruption to the county's most biodiverse ecosystems and aquifers sucked dry. The camel's nose is in the tent, said Mary Jean Young, legislative director at Audubon, Florida, which has started a petition opposing hydraulic fracking, otherwise known as fracking. And we know there's an interest. A state panel earlier this month okayed two bills that would require the industry to report chemicals used in fracking in a bipartisan 8-4 vote. The two measures passed through the majority Republican House Agricultural and Natural Resources Committee as the legislators grapple with the potential of Florida becoming the fracking frontier. In Collier County, less than 1,000 feet from the Big Cypress drainage basin and in the middle of the panther habitat, Dan A. Hughes Company applied for wastewater injection well permits, according to Florida Department of Environmental Protection. The Beeville, Texas-based company is leasing underground mineral rights from Collier Resources, which owns or manages more than 800,000 acres of mineral rights in three counties in southwest Florida. After a public protest, the Environmental Protection Agency agreed to hold a hearing on the permit on March 11th, said Jennifer Ribello, Field Associate for Environmental Florida. Environmental groups are concerned that if Collier Resources and its partner, Dan A. Hughes Company, are allowed to drill the wastewater injection well, it will set a precedent that will invite more and more oil and gas drillers into the Sunshine State. This could set a very dangerous precedent for Florida. Ribello also added that early indications are pointing to the induction of acid fracking to southwest Florida. The process would use water pressure and acid to blast open the limestone deep beneath the surface of the earth to release trapped gas and oil.
Mm-hmm.
Quietly and steadily, Matthew Schwartz, Executive Director of Florida Wildlife Association, is going to be on the show this coming weekend. An organization that fights to protect the habitat of the endangered Florida panther believes that fracking could be coming, but he's not sure when. If they see there's stuff down there they can get with fracking, the kind of people we are dealing with will frack. If there's money to be made, you can rest assured they will try. Oil and gas companies interested in fracking Florida have been building quietly and steadily over a year. As early as 2012, companies applied for early drilling and waste permits and had conversations with state environmental officials about the possibility. David Micah, Executive Director of Florida Petroleum Association, says research has shown that fracking could force up oil and gas that trap thousands of feet below Florida's surface in compressed limestone formations. Where hydraulic fracturing has been most successful has been in shale-type structures. It's now thought it can work with other formations. Those formations include Florida's limestone, 10,000 feet or deeper below the surface. Threat to panther habitat. Proponents such as Michael say that fracking could help provide energy in a state that gets about 60% of its overall energy from natural gas. They also point to historic conventional oil and gas drilling in the state and improvements in pipe casing and other technology used in hydraulic fracturing. Critics warn that in addition to water woes, the controversial process could disrupt biodiverse areas within the bordering public lands such as the Florida National Panther Wildlife Refuge and the Big Cypress National Preserve, thus proving harmful. Harmful? Harmful, you think? To the Florida species such as Florida panther, which an estimated 100 to 160 remain in the world. 800,000 acres of mineral rights owned by Collier Resource Company and Collier Lee and Hendry sits beneath much of the wilderness that is the panther's remaining habitat. South Florida Wildlife Association filed a lawsuit against the proposed well within 1 mile of Florida Wild Panther Wildlife Refuge. The well, South Florida Wildlands, is opposing, along with two other wells, would use the traditional hydraulic drilling, horizontal drilling technology. The kind of traditional horizontal drilling would be a precursor to fracking, said Schwartz. It's a possibility of opening the line to fracking in the future. On one well, they can go like an octopus in eight directions, he said. This, what we know for sure is the current rash of applications for horizontal drilling and seismic testing will be impacting and degrading the last remaining habitat. You know, Luis, these guys, you know, there's evidently no talking to them. Their only value is dollars.
Right, exactly. Just as bad as them are these legislators that are opening the doors to them, actually leading the way, and giving them, passing bills within bills secretly that actually give virtual immunity to these corporations. Not only that they also, under the pretext of, well, they have trade secrets to guard, they then ban access to you knowing what poisons they're putting in the water. You know, that's how they work. And then I imagine, there was a story today Associated Press of a study that said that, Kelso Priest, what a surprise, legislators are more likely to pay attention to a corporate representative than to a citizen. And say, well, whom are you surprising with that one? I think that the thing is that when you go to a Capitol building, I think they probably have they should put a big sign at the front that says, what's in your wallet?
Yeah.
You know, because that's how they are operating, campaign money, so that they can preserve themselves there, it's a great salary for a part-time job for many of these guys. And in the meantime, they move on. Whatever happens to us, they move on. They create the problems.
I was just up in Tallahassee last month, and I saw the way they were treating the people, and I saw the way they were treating the lobbyists. And, literally, I saw lobbyists pointing and laughing at citizens walking around the halls trying to do citizen lobbying. And while I happened to walk past the Senate hearing room, what did I see up on the wall? I saw a multimedia presentation about drilling for oil in southeastern Florida. We've been talking about southwestern Florida, but the presentation on the wall in the Senate was drilling in southeastern Florida.
Eastern, yeah. It's
what Miami-Dade needs, boy, some drilling.
Yeah, it's incredible. Of course, they're not going to do it in what is called Mar-a-Lago or whatever. It's Donald Trump property. They're not going to do there. It's amazing what they do, how they work. It is from the developers who want to put a concrete jungle across the state of Florida, to the people who want to drill every last drop of whatever fossil fuel there is. And, you know, when you have that the citizen is even laughed at, mocked by these individuals. Earlier today, I saw a note that Pussy Riot is in solidarity with protesters in Wisconsin who have been arrested, hundreds of them, and they are under arrest because they were singing in
right.
the Capitol building. And
right.
say, here you are, you know, if you are putting millions of dollars into buying an election, that is called free speech. If you sing in the Capitol building, that is called a crime.
Yeah.
What a country!
Yeah.
Here we go again. It's so bad. And, you know, I see what Anita has been doing over the years. She's a great activist. She keeps us informed about what they've been doing there in Southwest Florida. And, you know, I wish her the best, and she continues, because we need people who keep, you know, keep getting us going on this and informed. And there's plenty of work that they do and homework that they take with them constantly to find these things out. You know, it's, and I know people who are in North Florida, in Tallahassee, who are trying to lobby, doing their darnest to look at everything that gets in the docket, because you have to be, you know, you can't just show up one day, put a, you know, a sign on a weekend in front of an empty Capitol building and expect something to happen. You got to know out there, you know, be, you know, in the Capitol building, and you got to go in and find out what's in the docket, what's that they are bringing in, what's in that bill, and even then watch out for the poison pills that are attached consistently to these bills. And there was even let's see, 2 years ago, they actually passed a bill, nothing was said about it, in which actually the Florida legislature put the burden of proof on environmentalists see, and took it away from the developers.
I remember
so
hearing that.
Yeah, I mean, that's incredible. Yeah, and so you we're being disarmed.
And, you know, the thing is, it's not just us. I was out in Colorado over the holidays, and I was talking to a young woman over there, and, you know, they had those very bad floods. And a lot of the oil drilling rigs and the containment tanks and the refuse tanks got knocked over, spilled, polluted the rivers, polluted the creeks, polluted, and just killed a lot of stuff. And they said, this young woman was telling me, that she said, you know, when they have public meetings, when people would say, you know, we need to regulate this stuff, we can't just have this stuff all over the place, there can't be poison stored in every corner. She said, you know what? At the same time, there are other people standing up and saying, we don't want regulation. It's big government that's going to destroy everything.
Yeah.
And she said, you know, they don't realize you can't have it both ways. You can't have this silly cartoon version of regulation is automatically bad, when in fact you need regulation to protect your food, to protect your water.
Yes. People have been convinced, and I guess it's these people who choose to listen and never read or find out on their own, who are not inquisitive at all, and they accept what they're being told. And they just have to be hearing that, oh, well, somebody's going to get in your land. Oh, well, I don't want that, you see. And, well, you should not be paying taxes. I don't want to pay taxes. That's stealing my money. But wait a minute. Should we cut off the electricity to your house? Clean
Would
water
you like
to
a
your house? Sewer? Yes. You know, let's see all the things that we can cut off. And, trash collection. So what are you going to do? Go back to the old latrine in the back, the outhouse, and burning your garbage? No, it's insane, but they want something. They've been convinced that they can get something for free, everything for free.
Each week I've been interviewing someone from West Virginia on the ongoing story up there. And I interviewed one of the activists up there Sunday, who said that on the one hand, the government says, listen, everything's fine now. But, of course, if your local doctor says you shouldn't drink it, don't drink it. And, of course, when you say drink, you really mean cook with, wash in, and shower in, as well as drink the water. And she said, as a matter of fact, they discovered there's new leaks already. And I picked up this story from the Tribune, the Daily Mail out of Charleston, West Virginia. This is a story about some of the legislation that's come from this. And, this is going to sound so familiar because it sounds like it could be Tallahassee. Charleston, West Virginia, a House committee removed a requirement in the legislation created after the recent chemical spill for long-term medical monitoring. No, we don't need long-term medical monitoring. It was one of several changes made Monday evening by the House Finance Committee, the fifth legislative committee to discuss Bill 373. The bill was crafted in response to the Freedom Industries chemical leak that contaminated water for 300,000 West Virginians. And, of course, you and I know that if they're admitting 300,000, we know how they do their math. They do that special The medical monitoring provision was added by the House Judiciary Committee during a nearly nine-hour meeting that stretched into the early hours of Sunday morning. By a 12-11 vote Monday evening, the Finance Committee supported an amendment by House Minority Whip Darrell Cowles, Republican of Morgan, to strip the provision from the bill. There could be monitoring. There might be monitoring, just not required as a matter of course. Okay. Local, state, and federal health officials are still working to determine whether the more than 500 people who reported health problems were actually sickened by the spill. Hey, the local school board director said he thought the only reason people were worried was because they just wanted to skip school. Dr. Patricia Tierney, the state health officer and commissioner for the Board of Public Health, told the committee that such information would be needed for successful medical monitoring. The bill did not provide funding for the monitoring. Again, another familiar song. We've heard that one before. And Tierney said she wasn't sure how much it would cost. She didn't think the bill needed a mandate for the Bureau. It's just, in all honesty, we're going to try and do it anyway, she said.
Yeah.
Now, there's a difference between trying to conduct such testing and actually doing it, said Delegate Don Perdue. Perdue, chairman of the House Health and Human Services Committee, pointed to the recommendation by the Kanawha Charleston Health Department head, Dr. Raul Gupta, saying that such monitoring was vital. Intentions sometimes get pushed aside in favor of budgetary concerns.
Oh, my Lord. but you know what's dangerous about these people? That what's north of this area where they had the 300,000, at least, let's put it that way, at least 300,000 exposed, that you have a plant that is exactly like the Bhopal plant in India, which blew up, a few years ago. And it was incredibly destructive. And these are the people who have been entrusted to oversee all that. It's amazing.
Let me read you this other section because I think it's really interesting. They're thinking about monitoring, right? Even though they're gutting the bill and removing the monitoring, and removing the funding for monitoring. The committee also exempted coal companies regulated under the State Surface Coal Mining and Reclamation Act from several fees, passing two amendments proposed by Phillips. So none of this is going to apply to the coal companies, so thank goodness for that.
Okay. Oh, my God.
and it just gets worse. Delegate Nancy Guthrie of Kanawha, now this is the area right where the tanks were, pointed out that the chemical industry is also already regulated Now, the fact that that regulation failed and exacerbated, but that wasn't their fault. They're already regulated. Purdue and Finance Committee Chair Brent Boggs of Braxton said that they opposed the amendment. Phillips downplayed the danger of chemicals used at surface mining sites.
Oh.
He said, it's not the kind of chemicals that would cause a big health concern. He said, you know, the main chemical involved in the recent spill is used in cleaning and processing coal. It's typically used at coal preparation sites, which are already regulated, and therefore they would be exempt from the proposed bill.
Oh.
The committee also removed the requirement that every potential contaminant source in a zone surrounding a public water source must have an individual stormwater permit. Oh, hell, why bother, you know? And I don't know if you heard, just in another part of West Virginia where that coal ash spill was,
yeah,
they're digging this stuff out of the creek where this coal ash spilled, and they're putting it back into the still leaking coal ash holding tank.
Mm.
So they haven't solved the leak. They're just putting it back
in. They're putting
it,
yeah. It's just,
really?
You know, it's just like them. I mean, you say, where does it, but only in their, you know, bean counting mentalities. You know, they just worry about the bottom line, which is money. Who cares what they do to anybody in the process?
Evidently not.
It's come to
guys.
That. Yeah, it's what it's all coming down to. And the problem is, in the end, when you look at it, that they might have already, that first of all, because you're in the legislature and you pass that law, you know, you can't be held accountable for what it does. Nobody can sue you. They have immunity, and they make lots of money. You know, on the other
hand. That's a win-win.
Yeah. I mean, it's the worst of the capitalistic system when you think about it, you know, at work. And it shows, you know, everything that everybody has ever said that is wrong with the system. And there they are. It's corrupted all the way to the marrow. When they go and they leave the solution, what do you call it, the cleanup to everybody else,
yeah.
We the taxpayers will get hit with all the cleanups. That's what is happening in all these states.
Not here in Florida? I mean, they've got us paying for nuclear plants we're not even going to build.
Yeah.
Why would we not be building?
That's amazing. Yeah. And in the meantime, they're trying to kill the renewables.
Right. We certainly can't waste money on solar.
Exactly. Why do that? And it brings back one thing, one real fact about the oil and coal industry in the United States, and that is, and throughout the world, and they are desperately trying to find what is left. You know, that's where we're going, because they really have this world mapped out geologically, and they're trying to find the last drops of anything, and whatever fossil is left in the ground, they will get that drop no matter what, you see, at whatever cost.
There's one more story I want to bring up, and if Anita calls, we'll break her in. But there's another story that's just too big to ignore that hit the press today. And I'm referring, of course, to Dianne Feinstein's very interesting reading into the record about these spies who are ostensibly being monitored by the Senate. We can call it it's oversight. That's what we call it, oversight.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, look me over. But let me read you a little bit of this, because I'd like to get your reaction. You know, you're a very thoughtful person, and you're far from naive, and you have a great deal of experience watching what they say and what they do and parsing out the truth. So let me read you a little bit. This was Dianne Feinstein's statement on the Intelligence Committee's review of a CIA detention and interrogation report. Okay. She says, over the past week, there have been numerous press accounts written about the Intelligence Committee oversight review of the detention and interrogation program of the CIA. Specific press attention is focused on the CIA's intrusion and search of the Senate Select Committee's computers, as well as the committee's acquisition of certain internal CIA documents known as the Panetta Review. I rise today to set the record straight and to provide a full accounting of the facts and history. Let me say up front that I come to the Senate floor reluctantly. Since January 15, 2014, when I was informed of the CIA's search of this committee's network, I've been trying to resolve this dispute in a discreet and respectful way. I have not commented in response to media requests for additional information. However, the increasing amount of inaccurate information circulating now cannot be allowed to stand unanswered. Origin of the study. The CIA's detention and interrogation program began operation in 2002, although it was not until September 2006 that members of the Intelligence Committee other than the chairman and vice chairman were briefed. In fact, we were briefed by then-CIA Director Hayden only hours before the president disclosed the program to the public. A little more than a year later, on December 6, 2007, a New York Times article revealed the troubling fact that the CIA had destroyed videotapes. Now, of course, she said they're hearing this from the New Times, right, the New York Times.
Mm-hmm.
We learned that the destruction was over the objections. Wait a minute. More than a year later, on December 6th, the New York Times article revealed the troubling fact that the CIA had destroyed videotapes of some of the CIA's first interrogation using the so-called, quote, enhanced techniques, unquote. We learned that this destruction was over the objection of President Bush's White House counsel and the Director of National Intelligence. So they're just doing this on their own, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, after we read about the tapes destruction in the newspaper, Director Hayden briefed the Senate Intelligence Committee, and he assured us that this was not destruction of evidence, as the detailed record of the interrogation existed on paper in the form of CIA operation tables describing the conditions and the day-to-day CIA interrogations. Of course, they would be flawlessly represented. They certainly would be cover-your-ass cables, do you think? The CIA director stated that these cables were a more than adequate representation of what would be on the destroyed tapes. Director Hayden offered at the time, during the Senator Jay Rockefeller's chairmanship of the committee, to allow members or staff to review the sensitive CIA operational cables given that videotapes had been destroyed. Chairman Rockefeller sent his two committee staffers out to the CIA on nights and weekends to review thousands of these cables, which took many months. By the time the two staffers had completed their review into the CIA's early interrogations in 2009, I had become chairman of the committee and President Obama was sworn into office. The resulting staff report was chilling. The interrogation, now, if she was shocked, okay, clearly chilling,
yeah.
She was shocked.
Mm-hmm.
The chair of the frickin' oversight. The interrogations and the conditions of the confinement at the CIA detention sites were far different and far more harsh than the way the CIA had described them to us. No lounge chairs, I guess. No margaritas and no drinks with umbrellas. As a result of the staff's internal report, I proposed, and then Chairman, Vice Chairman Bond agreed, the committee's overwhelming approval that the committee conduct an expansive full review of the CIA's detention and interrogation program. On March 5, 2009, the committee voted 14-1 to initiate a comprehensive review of the CIA's detention and interrogation program. Immediately, we sent a request for documents to all relevant executive branch agencies, chiefly among them the CIA. Let's just stop here for a second. Okay, so we got the destruction of evidence, which they were assured really didn't matter. Now,
mm-hmm.
what kind of government official with a sworn constitutional oath swallows garbage like that, Luis?
It's incredible that they know what goes on. I mean, for one thing, they are the recipients. They are not the producers. Those committees. Those committees are sworn to secrecy, for one thing, and they're used for very, it's a lot of political power that comes with them. with that, namely that they can come out later and say, oh, I have all this experience in foreign, you know, policy and all that. But that said, these people were sitting there for, you know, years. They might not, she might not have been chairing that committee. She was sitting there in that committee. And when the first events took place and the first actions of the CIA were being made, these people didn't have any curiosity. They were completely incurious. Do they sit there and wait to be, you know, something put in a little baggie of goodies, and you take a look at them, and you don't say, tell anybody about it, you see? What was going on? I mean, and Feinstein is not, I've never been very trustful of Dianne Feinstein.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly in her politics and in her business. Given that she is very corporate,
mm-hmm.
When the whole thing about the healthcare was being debated, she flew in an airplane with 250 lobbyists from California to Washington D.C. if that's not showing you something there. But when did she ever confront George W. Bush? When did she ever stand up? You know, she didn't. I can't remember any time.
No.
That she questioned it when Gonzalez and you were making their statement. Where was she? Now, when Obama first became president, there was I can't recall the event itself. It was right there after, I think, the same week of his inauguration. And Dianne Feinstein stood up and said, you first have to come through me. She never did that to George Bush. It was, you know, it was like, you're a newbie here, and you got to know that I am the senator from California, and you got to pay homage to me, you see. But did she worry about any one of the responsibilities that she had at all that time? You know, that she comes up saying all these things now, it doesn't surprise me. But the motives, you know, are interesting, if anything, given that over the years it's been known that Hayden was not trustworthy, that it was Hayden who brought Poindexter of the Iran-Contra affair back into the government, and they put him in charge of data mining. And Poindexter developed all that program in its, in its entirety and ran it from a basement in Washington, D.C.
Now, do you think Senator Frank Church would have sat still for all that?
You know, I wonder. I wonder because, you know, over the years and from the history and the record, these people don't come out and just simply, you know, open the gate, the windows, and say, look here what I found. It doesn't happen there. And they've got a very, let's put it that, senators and members of the House, the same, you know, the equivalent in the House, they are sworn to secrecy to everything that, you know, they might have or they might be told by the FBI, the CIA, or any one of the 16, 18 secret agencies that we have in this country. We have thousands of people who have what we call it security clearance, which is amazing. I mean, wait. You have 18 government agencies, and then you have thousands of people who have access to prime security and all this. Now, how can you control that? And then not only that, George Bush brought in something extra that is not being considered here at all. Put aside the CIA for a minute, put aside the NSA for 1 minute. Is the collectors, who are they? For-profit institutions, security institutions. Several of them which are owned by ex-Bush White House staffers. And they went and they opened up private security and intelligence corporations. And they sell the information to the government agencies. And, they're given immunity for that. Who supervises them? You know, that's a big question mark that happens in there. And, leaks can be possible from a oversight committee, but they can be traced because there are so very few of them involved with that.
One of the things that I found really amazing is that here, you know, as compromised as she is, and I agree with you completely, she's a corporate Dem, she is bought and sold. From what I understand, the business her husband is in as well, mm-hmm. is as compromised as she is. But the thing that amazes me is here, she's essentially charging the CIA with lying,
mm-hmm.
with violating the Constitution, with avoiding and obfuscating the work of a congressional oversight.
Right.
And will anything come from this? I mean, I know it's really important that we talk about the governor of New Jersey's traffic interference, but
mm-hmm.
will any newspapers follow up? Where the hell are the charges? These guys destroyed evidence, and clearly no
yeah.
one's been troubled by this.
Oh, yeah. But that's a tradition in government, to destroy your papers. Years ago, when I was doing my dissertation, I had to work with a secret government agency that's not even known today anymore. It was the Bureau of Insular Affairs, which handled all the countries invaded by the United States, mainly at the islands in the Pacific and the Caribbean. Lo and behold, back in those days, from 1898 onwards, they kept secret files on the president of Cuba. They actually had one of the presidents of Cuba in their payroll, the first Cuban president, Estrada Palma. They had all this information all the way to the Filipino Wars and what was happening in the Philippines and all the politicians involved when Mexico was invaded. All these paperwork. And lo and behold, there was an accidental fire. And everything disappeared. that was well before we had the Secret Service.
Jeez.
And, of course, let me tell you also, another file that I was looking for during my historical research, you went to Texas. You've heard of the famous Texas Rangers. What a history. I went to look at where are the archives? What archives? Oh, they burned.
Yeah. We only have 90 seconds left, my friend. I want to thank you so much for joining me for our talk on fracking.
It was a pleasure.
And subjects beyond. Thank you so much, my friend. I wish you the
thank
best.
Thank you. And you take care.
You too, brother. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Talk to you soon. Well, folks, it's just about that time. I will talk to you Sunday. It's a great guest. I'll be coming to you. Thanks for joining us. You can post-season.